Chapter 10. When they reached the palace after their encounter with Gathley, Cressa recognised Branwise, one of the Queen's shield, loitering near the stables. Sergeant Bristle rode over to talk to him, while Cressa, with deliberate nonchalance, turned Nightmist over to the stableman with a compliment about the fancy ribbons in her mane. Bristle and Branwise fell in behind her as she entered the palace proper.
"Cappy needs to speak to you urgent-like, Mom,"
Bristle muttered under his breath. "Not my chambers," she said, trying not to move her mouth.
"Duty room,"
suggested Bristle, behind a hand that was casually rubbing his face. "No," she walked a few more steps, considering. "Bring him to the Princella's lesson chamber."
Bristle peeled off to get his captain, while Branwise stayed by her side. The Queen tried to move without apparent nervousness, acknowledging bows and curtsies as she usually would. Duchette Lumetta and Lady Denista lay in wait for her where two main corridors crossed. Although the palace proper boasted more than 300 rooms, the Queen's circulation through the building could be predicted.
"Ah, Lumetta, how kind of you to watch for me," said Cressa with a forced smile. "Here, take my riding gloves and hat. Do me the service, Duchette, of alerting my maids that I long for a hot bath. And, Denista, would you begin to lay out some gowns? I have an important meeting with my circle council, and you choose so well. I will be up presently."
The ladies looked pleased at being given commissions, no matter how trivial. Cressa crossed the palace and climbed a back stair to the now deserted lesson chamber. Chafing her cold hands in the room without a fire, with Branwise watching the door, she paced until Bristle and Captain Clemson shuffled in. Lines of stress seamed her officers' faces.
"So, here we are again," she said, making a feeble attempt to lighten the mood.
"Your Majesty, this note appeared on my desk in the guardroom," replied her captain, all business. "Several servants came in and out during the day, delivering drink and sandwiches. One of them may have left it."
Cressa unfolded the scrap. "Wash their hair."
"I don't understand," said Cressa.
"Took me a few minutes too,"
Clemson admitted.
"The writer is unlettered, or wants us to think so. She wants us to wash the hair of the dead assassins."
Fatigue made Cressa's mind slow and numb. "But why?"
"Because not all of them have brown hair. When we brought out buckets and soap, we saw that one man's hair had been darkened with mud. His brown is mixed with white.
An Oro."
"Aye."
"And what about the rest of them?"
"We checked carefully, all the rest have brown hair."
Cressa had been leaning against the cold fireplace, and now she whirled around.
"I am surrounded! The palace guard, the queen's shield, Oromondo, my own ladies, the councillors?"
She paced a few steps, feeling her eyelid twitch.
"Have you made any headway with Envoy Thumb? This is further evidence of Oro perfidy."
"Not yet. I regret we're not very experienced at extracting information."
"I wouldn't have it any other way. Your job is to protect me, not torture people. Perchance I should try my talent. Can you get me down to the cells without the whole palace noticing?"
That would be tricky," Bristle warned.
I thought so." Her eyelid jumped. "I have a meeting with my circle council in a little while. Afterward, we'll see if 'tis necessary."
"Should we question all the servants to find out who left the note?"
asked Clemson.
The Queen considered. "Someone is trying to help us. I'd like to know whom, but it might put that person in danger. Let's leave that for now." Back in her chambers, Cressa gathered assistants to change her out of her riding habit and ordered a pot of tisane.
Lady Aubrey, your lyre would sound soothing while I bathe. The rest of you work on finding me the perfect outfit with a high cap. Aubrey plucked a soft melody and thoughtfully refrained from peppering the queen with questions or comments as she marinated in the copper tub. Cressa relieved her gritty eyes and twitchy lid with a warm, wet cloth, which her lady-in-waiting refreshed with hotter water whenever it cooled. After her bath, Lady Dinista offered her a blood-red gown that she recalled as too tight, or the black velvet studded with sea pearls, but the latter she judged too sombre. She ignored Lumetta's lobbying for a white dress with feathers. In the end, she and Dinista settled on a light grey gown with darker grey sleeves, an outline of the Nargis fountain embroidered in blue threads that matched her hair colour on the front panel. She held her arms out as her lady started to robe her.
"Are you hungry, Your Majesty?"
her maid Jacilla asked with what, a day before, Cressa would have chalked up to sweet concern.
"Have you supped today?"
Cressa realised she had not eaten since early morning, but the suggestion also gave her an idea.
"Aubrey, pray fetch the chambellaine. Lady Dinista, put away those other gowns. Lady Fania, you may choose my slippers. Once you've finished with those laces, Lumetta, you are all dismissed for today."
"I'm sure you'll have a restful night tonight," said Lumetta with a smile that showed all her rodent teeth. "And tomorrow all our troubles will be over."
She closed the door as the ladies swished out. Gisilla had settled a grey velvet, stiff-brimmed circlet with a trailing scarf on the top of Cressa's carefully coiffed hair when the chamberlain arrived, leaning on a cane. For more than 30 years, chamberlain Teonora had supervised all the servants' hiring, firing and training, as well as the mini-city's provisioning and repairs. Her efficiency and organisation made the palace run smoothly, and her formidable presence made grown men quake. But last year, healers had found tumours in her belly. The woman used to carry a bosom like a bed bolster, but now all the starch and plumpness had fled her chest, while her middle poked out, grossly distended. Teonora's normal walnut colouring had taken on a greenish tinge, but she held herself as straight as ever. Cressa hadn't seen her for moons, and she felt a rush of pity and regret that she had let her sicken so without offering comfort, but also wariness. Could she trust her? Teonora curtsied, as if the movement took all her balance.
"Your Majesty, I have hoped all day that I could be of service to you. If you must be in danger, at least let me help. What can I do?"
Cressa's gaze met Teonora's in the reflection in her looking glass, as her maid threaded her aquamarine and diamond earbobs. The chamberlain's gaze held steady, and she nodded her chin ever so slightly. Cressa found herself wondering whether Retzel could have bribed Gisilla and her ladies if Teonora had been as strong as in previous decades. If she'd reached out to Teonora earlier, would she be in such trouble today?
"That will do, Gisilla. Leave us now," said the queen.
Then once the maid was out of earshot, she decided to take the gamble.
"I need your assistance during this upcoming meeting, Teonora," the dying woman said. "Tell me, Your Majesty."
An hour past the appointed time, it never hurt to make her counsellors wait for her, Queen Cressa entered the circle chamber with her head high, her back as straight as Teonora's, and her grey headpiece adding a thumb's length to her height. Although numerous candlesticks glowed about the room, she felt the winter night's darkness flowing in through the transoms as an oppressive weight.
The circle pool in the middle of the room looked black. Tonight the candle flames could not make the swirling water sparkle. As Jürgen seated her, she motioned for everyone to take their places. Matwick, struck with a tone of injured pride, warring with deep concern,
"Your Majesty, I regret I must lodge an official protest. The gravest events of my term have transpired, and you have not seen fit to confer with me. I was elected by the realm's leaders. I must be kept informed of such matters as intruders and attacks upon the palace. Please, allow me to do my job. Please, allow me to assist you."
"Steward, calm yourself. Here I am. I am conferring with you now."
Cressa smiled what she hoped was a disarming smile.
"You must understand that the day has been rather busy and fatiguing."
"Matwick, in your zeal you press too hard," chimed in Duchess Latley. "The Queen has had a terrible ordeal. In the absence of your dear mother, I do hope you won't scruple to lean on me. Two can bear loads too heavy for one. Armed intruders in the Princella's chambers? How is the moppet? We hope she isn't fearful or distressed. We haven't seen her about today."
"The Princella has a strong constitution. No need for alarm," replied the Queen, keeping her smile fixed on her lips.
"We have seen 10 bodies. Have they been identified? What was their aim?"
said Matwick, tapping his fingertips together to show his concern.
"Where did they come from? How did they get into the palace? How did they die?"
"Captain Clemson, the head of the Queen's Shield, is in charge of the investigation, as is the proper chain of command. He has all the details."
"Well, then let the captain appear before us now and answer our questions."
"Oh, no, Matwick. I fear he is too occupied for that. You wouldn't want to interfere. In due time. Wait until the morrow or the next day."
At this moment, the door opened and several servers appeared bearing trays of delicacies, including cured meats, fish roe, special cheeses, pickled vegetables, and carafes of wine.
"How is this? Now is not time for a fest," protested Matwick.
The servers, befuddled, started to back out.
"Stay," said Cressa.
"After such a trying day, you must all agree that a light repast is in order. As for myself, I haven't dined today. I wish to share these tidbits with you."
"Oh, how very thoughtful of you, Your Majesty, to think of us even in the midst of such trials."
Matwick yielded, and despite herself, out of years of yearning for his praise, Cressa almost basked in his compliment. Almost.
The servers provided plates for the councillors and began filling them, and Cressa ordered,
"Wine all round."
The servers' orders, per her arrangement with Tianora, were to continuously refill the councillors' gold flagons whilst filling her own with berry juice.
"This is delicious. Do try the duck sausage," said Cressa, "and the creamy cheese."
Tianora had raided the palace stores for the best fare. Cressa had been hungry, and she felt the food renew her energy.
"Oh, I just adore these olives," said Latley, tossing one after another into her mouth.
The Queen patted her lips on her napkin.
"Now that we have all been served, Lady Tenny, pray recount our interesting audience of this morn."
Tenny glanced around. 4 servers had remained in the room, standing at attention with their backs against the wall.
Yet circle meetings, by strict custom, were always held completely private, without even a secretary to record them. Tenny glanced at Matwick for guidance as to whether she should protest, and Matwick shook his head ever so slightly. As Lady Tenny relayed the story of Thumb's rudeness and arrest, Retzel drank his glass down in a gulp. Jürgen, Prisian, and Latley started on the cold meats and pickled quail eggs, which had been purposely chosen for their saltiness and spiciness, and then reached for the fine vintage, with the servants assiduously refilling their flagons at the least diminishment. Matwick sipped his wine more carefully, while Belcazar merely toyed with his goblet. When Tenny had finished, 10 minutes later, no one asked any questions.
"I would appreciate your counsel concerning Envoy Thumb," said the Queen.
"Has he given up any information to Clemson?"
asked Jürgen.
"I've heard he isn't speaking," said Cressa.
"As I said a dozen times, sorrows are very hardy," said Retzel, licking his fingers. "They will hold up under any physical inducement, eh?"
"A dozen times? You've reassured the others?"
Her counsellor for diplomacy turned to Cressa.
"I've been curious. How did your majesty know that the emerald was of Oro fashioning?"
"More wine, Lady Tenny?" Cressa stalled.
"No."
The counsellor put her hand over her flagon's top.
"Oh, but it helps one relax after such a trying day."
Cressa laughed just a little, as if the wine was already affecting her.
"Thank you, but I slept poorly last night," Tenny replied. "More wine, and I would nod off here at the council table. I'm already lightheaded. Your Majesty, the emerald?"
she prompted, staring at her intently.
"Oh, yes. One of my shields told me. Guardsmen seem to have experience with many forms of payment." Cressa kept her tone light and turned her attention to her fried clam.
Only her heightened alertness allowed her to notice under her eyelashes that Prisian clumsily bumped his knife against his plate. Tenny began coughing.
"Are you all right? Something caught in your throat?"
said Matwick, directing everyone's attention toward her and away from Prisian's anxiety. Tenny coughed dramatically a few more times. Matwick jumped up and offered her his wine flagon. Tenny drank, cleared her throat ostentatiously, and smiled to indicate that she could now breathe unimpaired.
Tenny, too. "Footman, pour Lady Tenny some wine. It is never a good idea to eat without liquid," said Cressa.
"Your Majesty, I have heard your shield now has a vacancy," said Matwick. "So sad. Although I trust the danger has passed with the arrest of Thumb, I have several excellent candidates to recommend."
"You are very kind. Though surely you realise the selection of the Queen's shield lies in the hands of her captain."
Cressa turned to the servers, ordering more wine. She continued.
"We didn't discover who wrote the threatening letter, but the attack last night denotes a direct escalation of the Oro threat.
Of course, we should consider the possibility that Thumb has lost his senses and could be plotting on his own. Before we overreact,
might it be politic to send an envoy to Oromondo to treat with them directly? What do you think?"
She strove to sound eager for advice and counsel.
"A noble plan, Your Majesty,"
said General Jürgen.
"Noble. Peach. At all costs, we must have peach."
He seemed unconscious of the fact that he had just referenced a fruit.
"But who could we send?"
Matwick steepled his hands as if considering deeply. Cressa kept her face somber and took advantage of the pause to eat a fig.
The only person I know who is brave enough, overwhelmingly loyal to the throne, and obviously has your Majesty's confidence, would be our esteemed colleague Balcazar,
Matwick pronounced.
Excellent plan, eh?
Said Lord Retzel, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand.
Matwick, what a clever fellow you are! You always arrange everything so neatly.
He waved his bejewelled hands expansively, not noticing that he sloshed drops of wine on the table.
A most sensitive diplomatic mission and an honour to be chosen, added Lady Tenny, with downcast eyes, as if she could no longer meet Queen Cressa's gaze.
Balcazar did not speak, but his brow crinkled as his fingers traced the circle his flagon had left on the table. Cressa looked around the table. It occurred to her that Prisian had been silent thus far. Her eyes met his. He blinked and averted his eyes.
Drought, damn you all.
What do you think, Balcazar? Of course you would not need to leave tonight, Cressa said to him. You would want to spend time with your family, get some of your affairs in order. Would 2 weeks be ample? Balcazar met her gaze, looked down, and then looked at her again. His forefinger rubbed the space between his brows.
I was Queen Katrina's servant, and I am yours to command. Excellent wine,
Jürgen smacked his lips.
Which cask did you tap?
He asked the servant who had just refilled his flagon too.
Theonora chose one of the reds from Prairie Vale distributed by Red Rooster, General.
Perfect choice! Red Rooster is my company, you know. One of my canniest investments. A great vintage last year.
Jürgen supplies the palace's wine through one of his business interests. Jürgen hires the carters who deliver the wine. Jürgen has thrown in with Matwick. The head of my army is a traitor.
Oh, indeed, General Jürgen. How fortunate.
Let us drink to your health, remarked the Queen with her sweetest smile.
The General threw back a full glass and smacked his lips again. Matwick took a contemplative sip.
I wonder, just as an extra precaution, would it be wise for Your Majesty and the girl to move to a new location for a few days?
The insolent way Matwick referred to the Princella infuriated Cressa, but she could not allow herself to show her feelings.
Latley dabbed at her mouth with a napkin, missing the pastry crumbs flecking her chin.
I would be honoured to host you at my manor house in Vitorine, and I do believe I'd make you most comfortable. The Princella would have playmates. We could sneak you away in the middle of the night and make this our secret.
She giggled with the wine.
Wouldn't that be a lark?
She wiggled her hands in a shiver of excitement. Retzel, drunk enough to treat his liege as a servant girl, wagged his finger at Cressa.
You'd be a fool not to consider.
Cressa interrupted Retzel, saying, How exceedingly kind of you, Duchess, but I'm sure that isn't necessary. And I feel safest in Nargis's palace.
As you should, Your Majesty, let me reassure you. The palace guard are on alert. My guard will die at my command.
Jürgen pounded his fist on the table.
I am mortified by last night's events. Simply mortified. If I live to be 101, I'll never recover from this.
Treachery? Cressa smiled at the general. She had trusted so gullibly, then gave in to an enormous yawn.
Oh, pray, excuse me. What a difficult night and an exhausting day. Lady Tenny, I probably should have followed your wisdom about the wine. Councillors all, I prefer to pick up this conversation in the morning. I fear I simply must retire now.